morning I talked to you about Saul hiding himself in the baggage, but tonight I'd like to talk to you about the importance of seeking a king. Father, bless the message now to our hearts in a special way. Help us to give our lives to seeking that next king. And give us, I pray, what you have for us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. This week, I probably especially needed a few special blessings. Not that I spent an unhappy moment this week, but I had an unusual load on my shoulders this week for many reasons. And I'm not only here at the church with all the responsibilities here, but something on a nationwide basis. And I felt maybe God gave me a little special blessing because I needed a few special blessings this last week. I was preaching down at the National Bus Convention in Winston-Salem on Monday night, Tuesday morning, Tuesday night. Folks were there from 12 states, they said, and 188 preachers were there in one particular service. And great crowds, over 2,000 people there Monday night and Tuesday night, and folks turned away. And that great church there, the largest Sunday school in the entire state of North Carolina, pastored by that amazing man, Bobby Robertson. I just don't know a more amazing man than Bobby Robertson. And if I had to choose in America the outstanding work in America, I'd probably choose the Gospel Light Baptist Church in Walkertown. Walkertown, nothing. It's out in the woods away from Walkertown. It's down the front porch of the church. You can see two houses. In fact, I told them, I said, you folks ought to be having twice as many Sunday schools you had last time I was here, because they built another house here in the neighborhood since I was here. And that doubled the population. But, you know, you'd be amazed to see that big auditorium seating 1,900 people. And they had over 3,000 in Sunday school last Sunday. Where's the largest Sunday school in North Carolina? Downtown Fayetteville? Nope. Downtown Charlotte? Nope. In the big city of Asheville? Nope. Greensboro? High Point? Nope. Where's the largest Sunday school in North Carolina? Outside Walkertown. And so we're talking, Brother Bobby Robertson. If there is such a thing as a self-made man, it'd be Bobby Robertson. I do not know how much training he's had theologically. Not enough to ruin him yet. I know that. And somebody asked Dr. Rice one time, said, have you had any formal, any seminary training? Yes, he said, but I got over it right away. And I was talking to Bobby Robertson, pastor of that church, and has been now for many, many years. He started the church years ago way out in the country, and he said, Dr. Heil, he said, remember? I said, remember what? He said, remember the great conferences you used to have years ago over at the Tabernacle Baptist Church? A pastor there named Paul Raker, not the old Paul Raider, but Paul Raker. He's in heaven now. He built a big old auditorium, had a church, ran about 200 in Sunday school, built an auditorium probably seated 1,400, just for the Lord conferences and so forth, and some of the great meetings we've ever had, we had there. And I said, sure. And Bobby Robertson, pastor of this great church, said, Dr. Howes, 26 years ago in 1956, you came to Winston-Salem. You're coming every year then. But he said, you preached and set my soul on fire. And he said, you taught soul winning, and I'd never won a soul to Christ in my entire life. He said, that afternoon, after you preached that morning and taught soul in the afternoon, I went out and won my first soul to Jesus Christ. He said, by the way, he said, that man is still a member of this church. And my old heart rejoiced as I realized through the years, all this traveling has not been in vain. All going up and down the country trying to find a king. Everywhere I go, I say, God, give me one preacher tonight and set him on fire. That's all I ask. Just give me one. Always looking for a man of God. Always looking for somebody to build a great work in a certain place. And he has a son. I do not know if I've seen a finer young man than Steve Robertson, the son of Brother Bobby Robertson. Steve is 32 years of age. And so Steve said, Dr. Howes, could I take you to your room after the service? I said, why, sure. And he were going back to the room, and Steve, such a tremendous fellow. He's assistant pastor there for his dad, and one of the most gracious, humble, gifted young men I've ever met. And he said, Dr. Heil, did you know? I said, what? He said, did you know that I'm one of your preacher boys? I said, no. Yeah, he said, I was a student at Bleep College in Chattanooga. And he said, I was a student there. And he said, you came to preach there, and said you preached one night, and he said, God called me to preach, and I walked the aisle and surrendered to preach under your ministry at Tennessee Temple, I bleep University in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And and I went home that night, and I needed a blessing in a special way, I think. And I got up on the bed, and I jumped up and down, and I said, blessed be God. I mean, it's worth it after all. After all these years of going up and down this country, and in one night, pastor of the largest church in the state said, Brother Howes, you taught me how to win my first soul to Christ. And then his son, great, fine young man, said, I was called to preach under your ministry. I guess that's what I spent my life doing outside, in the church here and outside the church. I'm trying to find kings. I'm trying to find great men of God. I'm trying to go up and down the country and do what God said to Ezekiel. God said, I searched for a man to stand in the gap. And he said, there was none. Now, all through these years. And then Dr. Wally Beebe came by to see me. He conducted the bus convention. And he came by to see me, and we took all afternoon on Tuesday. I mean, I picked up the telephone at 12:30 Tuesday afternoon to call preachers in trouble and folks having problems and called the staff. I put the telephone down off my ear at 5 o'clock. I mean, from 12:30, 4 hours, I did nothing but talk on the telephone. That's almost as much as Miss Colson talks on the telephone every day. And so finally, 5 o'clock, Brother Beebe had an appointment. He wanted to talk to me about his future or something. And so he came in, and this good friend of mine for many years, Dr. Wally Beebe, we were talking a while, and Dr. Beebe said, Brother House, remember, you ordained me. And did you know I'd forgotten about it? I'd forgotten that I conducted the ordination service when Dr. Wally Beebe was ordained. And we got talking about that night down in Danville, Illinois. Dr. John Rice and I were there together. And, oh, what a flop of meeting we had. First Baptist Church, Danville, years and years ago. So, first night we had 80. And the next night it grew to 40. And nobody showed up much. And, within a couple weeks after we left, the pastor ran off with the lady in the church, and Dr. Rice didn't put that in the sword, but he puts all the good reports about our meetings in the sword, it did. But anyway, and worst meeting we ever had. And we didn't get enough offering to pay our plane ticket back home. And Dr. I will forget it. We're sitting at a little bitty airport in Danville, Illinois, and Dr. Rice hardly ever got discouraged. If he did, didn't show it. But he looked over at me, and we were the only people in the airport, and didn't have enough money to get home on, and had 80 the first night and 40 the next night. That's sort of deflating when the pastor of the largest church in the world and the 20th century's mightiest pen draw crowds of 40 a night, you know. We could have stayed home and had a family reunion and beat that, and or gone to choir practice. Dr. Rice sitting there in the airport, and he looked up and he said, Dr. Howes, we didn't do very good, did we? And I didn't mean to laugh in his face, but I did. So we didn't do very good, and we didn't. And yet, several months passed, maybe a few years, and a young man came one night, and he said, Dr. Howes, my name is Wally Beebe. And I said, Brother Beebe, glad to see you. He said, you don't know me, but he said, you changed my life. And I said, God bless you, Brother Beebe. I said, where? He said, down in a little town called Danville, Illinois, several years ago, he said, I was in a conference there, and you preached one night to 40 people. And he said, God got a hold of my soul. And he said, the fire of God. And he said, I never had given invitation much, and I was just a dead preacher. And he said, God changed my life that night. And that one night, I prayed, God, just give me one preacher tonight. But God gave me two that night, because the same meeting, Dr. Bob Moore, got his life changed. His pastor of the First Baptist Church, Milford, Illinois, deacons wouldn't let him give an invitation, they said. And no invitation. And that night, the fire of God got to burn in his soul. And Dr. Bob Moore got on fire for God. And then before the day was over, I talked to Dr. Curtis Hudson a few minutes. And Dr. Hudson said, Dr. Howes, on the wall of my office, he said, there's a sword of the Lord, an old one. Dr. Hudson is editor of the Sword of the Lord. I said, what is it? He said, it's the Sword of the Lord that I read when I was a postman in Atlanta, Georgia. And he said, one day I was on my post route. I had a pastor of a church, didn't make any salary, had 20 members, didn't even believe in studying for a sermon, didn't believe in getting paid, didn't believe in growth, thought it was a sign of sin if you grew. And he said, I picked up a paper, swore with the Lord, and delivered it to a house, and the folks had moved. I looked there, and he said, in fact, I've seen that. He has it mounted on the wall in his study. And he said, I looked at it. I saw your picture. And it said that you baptized 500 and some odd converts. He said, no, he didn't. That's a mistake. Nobody baptized 500 converts in a year. That's a mistake. Now we baptize 10 times that many or 12 times that many a year. But he said, and then I noticed, you're going to be preaching here in this area. He said, Dr. Hiles, I want you to know that that night I went. He said, my life was changed. And he said, the next day I won the first soul to Christ that I ever won in my whole life. Four times. In one day, God had showed me. And one interesting thing, funny thing, did you know at all these meetings I thought I'd fail? The worst meeting, if you said, what is the worst Soul of the Lord conference or Bible conference you've had in your ministry all these years? I'd say the worst one was in, worst one was in Danville, Illinois. I said the second was at the Antioch Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. In Danville, we got Wally Beebe, and in Antioch Baptist Church, Atlanta, we got Curtis Hudson. Pretty good day's work, isn't it? That's one reason why when the crowd's down, it doesn't bother me. I'd rather preach to a big crowd than a little crowd, but I'll guarantee you one thing. If two show up, I unload the whole truck. I go ahead. I think I'm trying to encourage some people tonight. I wish that all of the young people in our church turned out right. I wish that every kid believed what is preached in this pulpit. Better still, I wish every kid listened to it. Just listened to it. And I could wish that every single young person in this church would turn out right. But blessed be God, if just one becomes a great man or a great lady for God, it's worth it all. It's worth it all. I search for a man to stand in the gap, said the Lord. One man to stand in the gap. Everywhere I go, I ask for one. Let me read you a scripture. And I sought for a man among them that they should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land that I should not destroy it. But I found none. Did you get the heart of God here? God said, I was going to destroy the land. And I tried to find one man to talk me out of it. He said, I tried to find one man to stand before me in behalf of the people, so I wouldn't destroy it. God is saying, if I could find one fella who had just come to me and argue with me and beg me not to destroy the people, I wouldn't destroy the people. I heard a preacher say the other day, God pity his ignorant heart. He said, I'll tell you why we can't have revival. Why, he said, we can't have revival in our church as long as one deacon's not right with God. Why, we can't have revival in our churches as long as one person's got some of God's money in his pocket. We can't have revival in our churches as long as members of the church are going out and getting drunk. Some of them are. Fooey on that stuff. My Bible says one man can cause God not to pour out his wrath upon a whole nation. One man. Somebody said, well, if all the deacons got right, that'd be revival. No, it wouldn't. It'd be the millennium. No, sir. No, one man never stopped revival. No, sir. 10 folks in a church never stopped revival. Over in the letter to the church at Laodicea, that wicked church that pleased the people, that church that was heathen, and that was the worst church of all the churches in Asia Minor. The Bible said, Jesus said, behold, I stand at the door and knock. The door of what? That church. That's not talking about the heart's door. We sing the song, at the heart's door, the Savior's waiting or knocking. At the heart's door, fast closed by sin. And don't you hear him gently knocking? Draw the bolt and let him in. And I think the Lord does knock at your heart's door, but that's not what Revelation chapter 3 is talking about. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. He's saying this, you got a bad church here. You got a heathen church here. You got a wicked church. You got a worldly church. But he said, if one man would open the door, I'd come in. Jesus said, I want to come in. I don't want to be left outside that church. I want anybody come, just one man come, open the door, I'd come in. And God said, I tried to find one man. Listen to that verse again. He said, I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it. God said, if I could find one man, just one man. You know, that's the verse I was reading on September 24th, 1966, when the basement of my home, the night before I was 40 years of age, the next day I was to be 40, and September 24th, 1966. Before the next day, I fell on my face, and that's the verse I read. The Lord said, I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land that I should not destroy it. And all of a sudden it dawned on me. God might save, hey, young folks over here, listen to me. God might save the land for one man. God might spare the land for one man. And I said to God, I said, dear God, I said, Moses said, Lord, if you're not going to save my people, just blot my name out of the book. And Paul said, I could wish that myself were a curse for my kinsmen according to the flesh. He said, my prayer to God and heart's desire for Israel is that they might be saved. Listen, one man saved Israel again and again. Moses stood in the gap again and again, and God said, I'm going to kill those people. And Moses said, don't you do it, don't you do it. And God said one time, said, let me get out of my way, Moses, I'm going to kill them. And God could not destroy the nation. Why? Because one man stood in the gap, that's why. And here God said to Ezekiel, he said, I wish I could find somebody to try to talk me out of this. I don't want to destroy my people. He said, if I could find one person, put up a good argument. He said, more than that. If I could find one person to argue at all. God said, I wouldn't destroy it. And I said, that night I got a map of America then now. I sold 16 years ago. I got a map of America. And I said, America, I may not can save you. But I said, there's somebody going to cry for you. There's somebody going to care. There's somebody going to beg God not to destroy you. Now, I don't know whether God will hear me or not. Let me be the man to stand in the gap. But I tell you one thing. I'm going to beg God not to destroy my country. And my prayer to God from that day to this is, oh, God, that our kids have a chance to live like we've lived and give our kids a generation of freedom. And that's why I've gone up and down this country and slept in motels till I'm sick of them and flown on airplanes till I'm tired of it and checked in hotels and eaten in restaurants that I won't even eat in a restaurant hardly anymore. Why? Because I like to travel. You try it every week of your life. You go to an airplane and sit on that stupid thing and sit in the motel room. And he said, why do you do it? I do it because somebody has got to go up and down the country and grab the preachers and shake them good and hard and say, in God's name, we've got to do what we can to save this old ship from sinking. That's the verse that broke my heart. Sometimes you may think you failed with a Sunday school class. It may be Sunday school teacher. It may be that you got 15 folks in your class. And it may look like the whole class is not listening to you. The whole class doesn't have to listen to you to make it profitable. Won't you look for a king in that class? Won't you ask God to give you one pupil in that class that'll do something for him? Won't you ask God to give you just one pupil that sits out there where the seed will lodge in his heart? Sure, I'd like to see all our kids turn out right. And God pity young people that don't turn out right in this place. If there ever was a church and a people who've done everything in the world they can do to safeguard the decency and morals and principles of young people, it's the First Baptist Church of Hammond. And you young folks that turn out bad, you mark my word, heavy, heavy hangs over your head. And you'll pay for it more and suffer more than a kid would that turns out bad in a liberal church. My Bible says, woe unto you, Bethsaida. Woe unto you, Chorazin. Woe unto you, Tyre and Sidon. The works that had been done in Sodom and you, had been done in Sodom and Gomorrah, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes years ago. It shall be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah the day of judgment. I want every teenager in this house to hear me. Everybody between 13 and 19. Hear me now for a minute. If you don't turn out bad, the judging hand of God is going to be upon you more than it will be upon a fellow that goes down here to one of these liberal churches on Liberal Row on Holman Avenue. Don't you take it lightly when you flippantly take your little pot and smoke it in your heathen lips. And don't you take it lightly when you get on Lover's Lane and act like animals. Don't take it lightly. And don't you take it lightly when you pick up that Playboy magazine, because to whom much is given, much is expected. And if there ever was a generation of young people who had a chance to turn out right, it's the young folks in this church. But if the conference isn't good, there may be a
king sitting out there named Wally Beebe.
Or there may be a king sitting out there, not yet crowned, not yet anointed, named Curtis Hudson. Or there may be a king sitting out there listening to you preach, not yet crowned, not yet anointed, named Bobby Robertson. Sometimes you think you failed. Take courage. Ask God just to give you one. One night I preached in Greenville, South Carolina years ago at the Tabernacle Baptist Church, Dr. Seidler. I've never seen such a wild bunch of Indians in my life. If you've never been there, you ought to go there. Harold Seidler's one of the finest men in America. And that church, I mean, listen, this church is like an Episcopalian funeral compared to that one. One night, years ago, I was there. I preached first, Dr. Rice preached second. And I preached, and one guy back here got happy. He went, whoopee! He ran to the aisle and started running down the aisle just like that, right in the middle of the sermon. And he pulled the Lord's Supper table out so he could run around it and just ran around the Lord's Supper table. And I stopped and watched him. And Dr. Rice got up. And everybody started hollering and screaming. And Dr. Rice couldn't be heard. And he said, hey, have me have your attention, please. They wouldn't listen to him. Nobody's shouting, praising God. Hey, he said, let me have... And he said, now, he said, look, I've come to be heard. He said, I know I like to see folks happy, but he said, tonight, would you mind just take your handkerchief out? Instead of shouting, just wave your handkerchief if you get happy. Look like a snowstorm inside that church all the rest of the night. And, but I preached one night in Greenville, South Carolina. And, if I ever laid an egg, that was it. If that leg ever hatched, twin dinosaurs would come out, I'll tell you for sure. And so boy, there's nothing quite as lonely as to, you know, if you blow it the last night you're there, you can come home. But you blow it the first night, you've got to go back and face them again. You've been there, haven't you, Doc? Oh, brother. I felt like that preacher in Texas. Often I do. But came home on a Sunday morning, his wife says, time to eat. He said, I don't want to ever eat again. His wife said, why? He said, because I can't preach and I don't know anybody that can. And sometimes that's the way every preacher is. And that night, oh, my soul, I preached a sermon. I thought one of the best sermons I had. I've never preached it since. I tore the outline up. I'll never use it again. And I am. And so during the closing prayer, I tiptoed and took off running. I was going to walk to my room. And I just took off during the closing prayer. And walking down a hallway, I saw a sailor. And I said, son, you know, if you died, you'd go to heaven. And he said, no, but I'd like to. And I said, let's go back in the classroom here. And I guess I must spend an hour and a half trying to get that sailor converted. Never saw a fellow as hard in my life to get assurance he was saved. We must have prayed a dozen times and finally got the assurance he was saved. I'd forgotten about it. That was one of the worst services I was ever in, one of the sorriest messages I ever preached. And so, years passed. I got a note not long ago, a few years ago, from a fellow Howells Anderson College student, said, thank you for winning me to Jesus. I didn't remember winning to Jesus. I called him in. I said, when did I win you to Jesus? He said, years ago in Greenville, South Carolina. He said, you told me about Jesus. The sailor's name is Marty Miller. Came to our college. You see, sometimes you fail, and sometimes you feel like you've done the best you can, but the best is not good enough. Okay. If you can't reach everybody, try to get one. Look for a king. I mean, these people, they said, where's Saul? It's time to place the crown on his head, and the scepter in his hand, and a robe on his back, and put him on the throne. Where's Saul? And these fellows said, we'll go fetch him. We'll go fetch him. They went to God and said, where is he? God said, he's hiding out there amidst the baggage. They went out there and Saul had to stand up, his head and shoulders with other people. And these fellows brought Saul back. That ought to be our job. Look for the king. Looking for a king. Searching for a king. years ago, I told you about this, but I thought so many folks are new and I want to hear it myself. And I was asked to preach in a tabernacle, big tabernacle. They built it just for revival in Fort Worth, Texas. They had Harvey Springer one night. He was an old cowboy evangelist. And somebody 1 week and somebody else 1 week. And then I preached 1 week. So, one night, and a cold spell came in. I mean for Texas, down around 20 degrees, and that's cold in Texas. And, it was cold. And been up around 70, and you go from 70 to 20 in one day. And they didn't have any heat in that tabernacle. Not any heat. 10 people showed up. 10. Seated 1,000 people. That size, these four sections here on Mainville. Seated 1,000. And 10 folks showed up. So there were, I think, 6 of us on the platform, 10 out in the audience. And somebody had gone and gotten a little old wood stove and put it right back in the middle. And there, and I wish somebody had bit noses, it wouldn't run. And, but 10 folks showed up. That night I preached on to hell and back. Those 10 people are back there around the stove, just round a circle, you know, like in a little country store somewhere. And they weren't even looking at me. But I unloaded the whole truck. I preached an hour on hell. It's the only way I keep warm. Preach on something as warm as eyes are freezing and cold up where I was. And I ran up and down that platform, hollered and screamed, and they're sitting back there warming their hands, all 10 of them around the fire. I was so glad to see them eating the end of my life. Went back home, forgot it. Years passed. I became pastor of this church. I was preaching several years ago up in Birmingham, Michigan. And at a pastors and workers meeting. And so a big tall fellow, about 6'4", 6'5", stood up and said, I've asked for the privilege of introducing Dr. Hiles before he speaks. I didn't know him. He said, you see, Dr. Hiles got me saved. He said, years ago, Dr. Hiles was preaching a revival meeting under a big tabernacle in Fort Worth, Texas. I sat up on the edge of my seat and thought, what in the world? He said he preached that night on to hell and back. He said, never heard a man preach on hell. He said, I was sitting back there warming at a stove. It didn't look at him, but I heard everything he said. He said, I got saved that night. It's too cold to walk the aisle, he said. But there I was, freezing up there on the platform. That idiot wouldn't even walk down the aisle. He said, Dr. Hiles, he said, that night I was saved. He said, I've driven miles today to tell you thank you for being faithful, even though there are only 10 people there. And he said, now I'm pastoring a Baptist church not long far from here. You see, look for a king. There may be a king in your Sunday school class you don't know about. It might be the worst class you've ever had, but there may be a king sitting there. You see, the house of my class just doesn't listen. You only have to have one of them to listen. He may not even act like he's listening. Maybe a king there. Years ago, I was going to preach up at the Grace Baptist Church in Mankato, Minnesota. And they asked me, they called me from Pillsbury Baptist Bible College. They said, Dr. Hiles, could you come on Monday and preach on chapel? Well, that meant I had to drive all night long. Jim Lyons and I drove. All night long, I drove. Jim slept. And so the assistant pastors, most assistant pastors sleeping while the preacher's working. And so... Wake, John. And so, anyway, all night long. I never was tired. Got to Owatonna, Minnesota to preach at Pillsbury Baptist Bible College. Hadn't had a wink sleep, except I got there about 7 o'clock. And I crawled up in the seat of the car and slept about 45 minutes. And then rushed to a service station to freshen up in a service station. To me, there's no place worse than service station to freshen up. Because the restroom is always dirtier when you go in it than you are when you go in it. And so, then I went to preach. And if ever was a preacher, blew it. I blew it. And I, honestly, I didn't know what to preach myself. And if I hadn't been paid to preach it, a few dollars, I'd have walked out on myself. And so, I was embarrassed. Dr. Monroe Parker was president there then. And I was embarrassed. I was humiliated. Those students that heard about the First Baptist Church of Hammond that heard about Dr. Jack Hiles. And I was so humiliated. It wasn't until years later, a young man walked up to me and he said, Dr. Hiles, he said, you changed my life. He's pastoring one of the great churches in America today. I said, where? He said, Pillsbury Baptist Bible College. He said, one night you drove all night long and you preached. And he said, you preached on study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And he said, Dr. Hiles, while you were preaching, I sat back there and said, that's the kind of preacher I want to be. That's the kind of preacher I want to be. That's the kind of preacher I want to be. I don't know if he meant sleepy or what, but now, by the way, he pastors one of the largest churches in California right now. I'm saying, yes, for the house, you mean, are you saying it's good to fail? No, I'm saying if you're faithful, you never fail. God may have a king sitting out there. So often, I have not enjoyed a message I preach, but it's just exactly what somebody needed. And I'm saying tonight, I'm saying that always looking. Sunday school teacher, say it. I'm looking for a king. He may be hiding in the baggage. He may not want to become a king, but I'm looking for a king. Say it. School teacher, say it tomorrow morning when you walk in your class. Get on your knees and ask God to give you a king out of that class. Say it. Football coach, say it. Basketball coach, say it. Wrestling coach, say it. Most important thing is not trying to win a game, and I'm certainly for winning, but say it. Say, oh God, give me a king off this team. Don't give me a Jerry West. Give me a Dwight L. Moody. Don't give me a O.J. Simpson. Give me a Vinny Sunday. Say it, bus worker. Say it. I'm looking for a king. Look in your Sunday school class. See if you can't find a king. Mr. Kimball did and found Dwight L. Moody. Look in your school classroom. Ask God to give you a king. Jacob Trebonius did several hundred years ago as he walked in his classroom and bowed before his class and took off his hat. And somebody said, why do you do that? He said, because I know not what great and mighty and learned men sit in my class. Now, little boys, he did not know because sitting in that class that very day was Martin Luther. Jacob Trebonius didn't know he had the Reformation in the palm of his hand. Looking for a king. Look for it in your congregation. Moody did. Dwight L. Moody was preaching in a big campaign in a tabernacle. Places packed and jammed. Young 17-year-old lad tried to get in. He couldn't get in. They said, no floor room, son. But I've got to get in. You can't do it. He couldn't get in the door. He climbed up beside the building and crawled out on the rafters up above the crowd and laying down on a rafter looked down on Mr. Moody. Mr. Moody looked up and pointed to him and said, God can use you, son! And God did use him because the name of that man was H.A. Ironsides, who became Moody's successor at the great Moody Church in Chicago. Moody looking for a king. Dr. John Rice was walking down a tent, down a sawdust aisle in a tent in Oklahoma years ago. A little 9-year-old boy walked by and Dr. Rice patted him on the head and said, son, God tells me you're supposed to be a preacher. And that little boy looked up startled with a startled look at Dr. Rice. And that minute, that little boy said, oh, then I'll be a preacher. That little boy was W.A. Criswell, who's been for 35, 40 years pastor of First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Looking for a king. Always looking for a king. Look when it seems that no one listens. Look in your home. That boy that called you mother may have royal blood in his veins. Susanna Wesley did. Every Thursday night for 1 hour, she had a private session with John Wesley, her 17th of 19 children. She gave him 1 hour a week to teach him about life. That's more than some of you do in a month or a year. She didn't know it, but she had John Wesley. I'm no great preacher, and I make no shakes about it. I'm not one of the giants. But I do the best I can to serve God, and over 250,000 people have been saved in services where I've preached in these years, 37 years. Mrs. Bethel didn't know she had a preacher on her knee that morning in Sunday school, and she said, Jackie boy, Jesus loves you. He probably loves you more than loves anybody in this class. She didn't know she had Pastor First Baptist Church of Hammond and Dan on her knee. No. My mother didn't know she had preacher on her knee, though she prayed she would. When she taught me this book on her knees night after night after night and prayed for me and with me. When she'd go out in the back of the car when Dad was sleeping off a drunk and get the whiskey that Dad had left in the car and take it out of the car and say, come here, son. She'd take a rock and put the rock down in front of her and she'd take that bottle of whiskey and break that bottle of whiskey over the rock and smile as it spilled poured all over the ground. My mama would say, son, that's what you ought to always do with whiskey. Mama didn't know she had a preacher boy. She was training. You don't know it either. Look at them, bus route, bus workers. I was a bus captain once. years ago in East Texas. I was pastoring the Grange Hall Baptist Church 10 miles outside Marshall, Texas. I didn't have any bus workers. I didn't have any soul winners. I just took over the church. Had an old car. It was a 41 Dodge. Called it Jezebel because it would never run too well. And I'd get in Jezebel. And I'd drive Jezebel up and down those country roads. I'd fill that car up on Sunday morning. When the car got where I had too many people for the car, I got an old beat-up bus and started filling up that bus. That's where my first bus ministry started. I was the first bus captain I ever had. And it started all because my car, Jezebel, wasn't run enough. Didn't know someday I'd pastor a whole fleet of big Jezebel. I went way across town, out North Franklin Street, out past the lumber mill, to a little settlement of lumber people out there. One day, knocked on the door of a simple little house, and a fellow came to the door. I said, is your wife in? And he said, yes, I talked to them. Had a little boy there, teenage boy there, about 13 years of age. I told that boy about Jesus. My first bus route. That little bus kid is a missionary to the Philippines tonight. I drove way across across Marshall, Texas, down the Port Cato Road, and then turned off the Port Cato Road, little old country road. Drove up one day, knocked on the door, and told the whole family about Jesus. Had a little girl named Jeannie. And the old bus went by together and brought her to Sunday school. And Jeannie married that 13-year-old boy. And now for years, they've both been missionaries to the Philippines. Just stay after them. You say, well, how does it get you discouraged sometimes? I just don't think they hear a word I say. Ask God to give you one. There's a king out there somewhere. Be ye not weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not. On that same bus route. Had a little couple of kids named White. Couple of white kids. And they had, their grandmother brought them to church. Their mother and dad didn't. And the grandmother got too old to bring them, and I went and got them. Every Sunday morning, I'd go in my car and drive the little kids, white kids, down on the Highway 43, driving to Sunday school. And then, when I got the old bus, I would go by and get them on the bus. I was in Richmond, Virginia, at the largest independent Baptist church in Richmond, preaching. And the pastor, one of my preacher boys in East Texas, and he said, do you know my wife? And I said, who did you marry? And he said, I married, remember the little white girl lived down on Highway 43? I said, remember? He said, well, my bus kid. Now she's a lovely pastor's wife. I was down in Louisiana preaching several years ago. Dr. Rice was preaching before I did. And I was sitting over on this side, and the handsomest couple you ever saw walked in. I mean, just looked like, you know, you've seen them. Guy had, his middle-aged man had graying temples and just handsome, looked like he's president of the bank or the president of the board. And his wife looked like she stepped out of a fashion magazine. And I thought, wow, wonder who they are. And I didn't whistle, but I thought, that's a... well, and I want you to know, I'd never seen a fine-looking couple. And so during intermission, as soon as Dr. Rice finished preaching, they walked right up to me. And she said, Brother Hiles, do you know who I am? It was that fashionable lady. And I said, no. She said, now, Brother Hiles, think hard. And I said, no, I don't know. And she said, I'm one of the Graham kids from Marshall, Texas. And I said, you're not. She said, yes. I remembered when they moved into a little shack on Middle Roseboro Springs Road. I was out soul winning that day in Jezebel. And I saw an old truck unload in a house that had no restroom and had no gas heat. And I got out of the truck, Jezebel, and got up on the truck and helped unload the furniture. And I said to the bunch of kids there, I said, would you like to come to Sunday school? And they said, sure would. I want them all to Jesus. Maybe got on a bus route. And she said, I'm one of the Graham girls. I said, what are you doing now? Oh, she said, this is my husband, Dr. I'm trying to think of his name, Dr. Sensat. You know him? For the Sensat down in Louisiana? So this is Dr. Sensat. He's pastor of the First Baptist Church of a town not far from here. See, when you get old like I am, you just go across the country clipping coupons. That's all you do. Yeah. Yeah. Be ye not weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not. Same bus route. One day, I went over to the hospital, TNP Hospital. It's a railroad town, Marshall, Texas. Out soul winning. Across the street, knocked on a door. A couple of real nice-looking girls, cheerleaders in high school, came to the door. And I said, hey, I'm Brother Hiles. Pastor First Baptist Church, Grange Hall Baptist Church out in the country. And I won both of them to Jesus. Oh, by the way, Catherine's one of them. Catherine's married to John Gunter. Been serving as a missionary all these years. That's on one little bus route. Well, you say, Brother Hiles, I haven't got people like doing that. Just keep it up. I didn't work on that bus route for a year and say, I haven't got the missionaries yet. Had missionaries then either. Had a bunch of snotty-nosed kids. Had to beat the dickens out of them every Sunday morning and keep them on the bus. I'm saying that the truth is, if you'll stay in your class and stay in your bus route and stay on the job and be spiritual and ask God to bless you, there are kings and queens out yonder. Go look. Come to our fall, our spring program in God's name, we ought to give ourselves to it. I was up in Virginia. Assistant pastor of a church there came and told me, said, you know who I am? I said, yeah, I know you, buddy. Assistant pastor of a church. He was one of the bus kids on that one old bus we had down Marshall, Texas. I was down preaching in East Texas, a town called Longview. Pastor said, I want you to meet the best bus captain I've got in my church. I said, I'm glad to see you. Oh, she said, Brother Howe, don't you know me? No, I don't know you. He said, she's the best bus captain I got. And I said, who are you? She said, I'm one of your bus kids. Here's a coal you used to come by and get me and bring me to church. Dr. Evans, did you ever know Margie Wiley Stewart, Tennessee Temple? Anybody here ever know Margie Wiley Stewart, Tennessee Temple? She taught there. She was one of my little bus kids years ago. I won her dad to Christ. He's 50 years old. Mr. Wiley. And I was out when I won her to Christ. A little 9-year-old girl looked up and said, Mr. Brother Hiles, you ain't going to forget me, are you? And I said, no, honey. And I led her to Christ. That was little Margie Wiley. She became Margie Wiley Stewart. Was on the faculty at Tennessee Temple for years. Until she was in a car wreck and went to heaven. But you say, Brother Hiles, I don't see that much possibility or prospect in my class. You don't have to see it. Young man in this church, been here for years, and I'm going to close with this. That young man came to my office one night, and I said, I'll call him Bill. It's not his name. He's here tonight. I said, Bill, you ought to go to Hiles Anderson College. He's a married man. He said, Brother Hiles, I'm not smart enough to go to college. I'm not smart enough. I couldn't pass. He went to college and came back again. He said, I'm going to quit. I said, no, you're not. I said, you ought to finish college and make something out of yourself. He said, Brother Hiles, study's too hard for me. I'm not smart enough. I can't be in the Lord's work full time. I'm not smart enough to graduate from college. And I said, yes, you can. And he, like Saul of old, said, I couldn't. But you put Jesus in it, and you can. And so he went through Hiles Anderson College. And he's sitting right there in the middle of this crowd. Roy Moffitt, you know, that night you sat in my office, said, I'm not smart enough. Little did I know how right you were. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Sing it. They shall mount up with wings as an eagle. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
That's it.
Teach me, Lord. Teach me, Lord, to...
The Bible doesn't mean to wait. Doesn't mean wait and let the Lord do it. It means do all you can, wait and let the Lord give the results. I don't go anywhere to preach anymore. You know, I used to preach with Dr. Bob Jones Sr. and Dr. John Rice. All across the country. Dr. Lee Robertson. And I was a young preacher then. My 20s, early 30s. And everywhere we'd go, old Dr. John had a bunch of folks gather around him. And Dr. Robertson had a bunch of folks gather around him, his converts and folks that helped him, his preacher boys. Old Dr. Bob Jones Sr. had the biggest crowd of all. His own people that he'd influenced in his revivals in his school that had come to hear him preach. And I used to stand over in the corner and wish I had somebody to come and shake my hand. I was just a kid preacher. Dr. Rice is gone now, and Dr. Bob's been gone for many years. But bless God, there's no place I go in this country. But when I walk on the platform, they're out there waving at me. Yeah. Most every place I preach in this country, before I've been in a building 5 minutes, I've got chocolate candy on the seat of my britches. I always put Reese peanut butter cups in the chair and I sit down the dumb thing. Yeah. Sure, I wish that all the kids turned out right. I'm talking to some mighty discouraged workers tonight who wish your class would listen. And you wish your bus kids would do right. And your school kids are breaking your heart. Or maybe your family, your own children, have broken your heart right in two. And you say, Brother Hiles, sometimes it's just not worth it. They don't all have to turn out right to make it worth it. There might be a king sitting in that place you don't know about. There might be a queen sitting in that place you don't know about. What I'm saying is just keep on. Just keep on. Be you not weary in well-doing. I preached one night in Jacksonville, Florida. Brother Olaf preached right before me and preached on well-digging. And I preached after he did and preached from Galatians chapter 6 on be you not weary in well-doing, for in due season you reap, faint not. A very simple lady. Looked like she didn't have quite all the parts in place. She came up and she said, Brother Hiles, that's the best sermon I ever heard. I said, thank you. She said, you know what I like best about it? I said, what? She said, Brother Olaf, just preached on well digging. And I was glad you preached on be you not weary in well digging, for in due season you should reap if you faint not. I never told her that it was wrong. I just wanted to get a blessing. Be you not weary in well doing. Just keep on. And keep on. And keep on. And keep on. And one of these days you're going to find a king. You're going to find a queen. I'll tell you what. If you could find one king in a lifetime, wouldn't that be a wonderful way to spend a life? They that wait, sing it upon the Lord, shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as an eagle. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Amen.
Teach me, Lord. Teach me, Lord, to
pray. So just hang in there. Don't throw in the towel. Just keep on trying to rear the kids. Who knows? You may have a king sitting at your table. Just keep on teaching your Sunday school class. Who knows? There might be royalty sitting out there. You won't know which one. But there might be. Looking for a king, a man to stand in the gap, always looking, and thank God, we found a few. Father, bless the message. Encourage our hearts tonight. I pray you'd help us, those who are about to throw in the towel, to stay in the battle. Those who are about to the end of our rope to tie a knot and just hang on to it. I pray you'd help us to wait upon the Lord.